Hello and welcome. Jake, are you just burning calories over there right now?
Yeah, I...
Tell us what you got there.
Well, I picked up an energy drink at 7-Eleven. I got Derek a Blue Red Bull, and I want to try something different. I got Rowdy Energy.
It's time to get rowdy, baby.
Right in the center of the can, it says burns up to 135 calories per can.
Like,
I don't know if it's possible. Two, if it is, there's no way that's good for you.
Is it going into your body and burning the calories? Or is it the act of drinking? I'm just confused how that works.
So there's 5 calories in this whole can.
It looks like there's instructions on the back right here, actually.
Yeah, oh, there's a flame. This is not good. Wait. Power Burn is the next generation multifunctional beverage that can help you stay energized and empowered to fuel your fire.
I promise this isn't an advertisement.
We pair natural caffeine with our other proven thermogenic ingredients to help you burn up to 135 calories per drink.
So if I just hammer like 10 cans of those, is that like going to the gym or?
Yeah, I don't know. This is crazy.
All right. Huh. We've had our non-basketball conversation of the day. We can officially pivot into basketball. It was a pretty good week, I feel like.
Yeah, fun week.
The Pelicans have lost like 10 games in a row.
Yeah.
Alabama beat Vandy by like 108 points.
After getting blown out by OU.
The Warriors are back. I watched with my own eyes Steph Curry just go absolutely ballistic. Just.
It's funny. A lot of the Thunder riders, people in the media, they I guess that's a lot of their first times like seeing the Warriors up close, or maybe as of late. And I saw a lot of tweets like that. Like, wow, Steph Curry's like one of the craziest basketball players I've ever seen. Wow, the Warriors are so good. It's like.
They're different. Truly. You can watch it on TV all day until you see it.
It's just
in person.
A different game.
Different, man. Yeah. Different. Josh Giddey talked about it post game. It's like, and I was actually talking about it to one of the people I was watching with. The way they react is nuts. Like, their reactions via a decade of playing together are just like
second nature.
Exactly. Second nature. It is nuts to watch.
You know, I'm stating the obvious, but that's why they're always like so good come playoffs. Even if they have a regular season, like they're a machine. They don't have to, there's no starting over every year. There's no type of like, continuing to figure things out. Like they can just play their best basketball when it's needed because their core group of guys have played together forever and won games. And these guys that they're bringing in are like selected. I mean, like you do in every team in the draft, but like selected to fit that mold. And they're brought up through the first few, 3 or 4 years of their career to fit that mold. And they're a machine.
It's not quantifiable how like helpful it is to keep teams together like that. Like Draymond Green with the ball in his hands knows exactly to like the millisecond where Steph Curry and where Klay Thompson are going to end up at any given moment. Like it's just unquantifiable.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. How many teams would, you know, in the year they drafted Wiseman, guys are injured. How many teams would want to get rid of Klay, get rid of Draymond, you know, keep Steph and build kind of a new core? There'd be tons that would do that.
Decent amount. Yeah.
But they don't, they keep it together, get younger guys, get free agents and
get a championship.
They're just that good, man. That good. It's pretty impressive. A lot of good college basketball, too.
Yeah, like, there was.
There were, over the weekend, every top 25 team played on TV, I believe. So it was pretty nice.
Also, Boomer, go Sooners.
Oh.
Taking down number 2, Alabama. My boy, Brandon Miller, had a bit of a stinker. Let's pivot to NBA draft.
Cool.
We are going to do our prospect of the week, our one deep dive. And this week, it's over one of the better stretch big prospects to come out of high school that we've seen in a little bit, Kyle Filipowski. Flip, as he is affectionately known as, is a freshman at Duke. He was a consensus top 7 guy out of the 2022 class. He'll be 19 on draft night. Right now for Duke, he is averaging 15.8 points, 9.5 rebounds, 1.4 assists on less than ideal shooting splits, which we will talk about later. 44% from the field. Not awful, but not quite what you want from a center, a 7-footer. 29% from 3, pretty abysmal. And then 78% of the line, which is pretty good.
And but before we move on, the field goal percentage, a large chunk of that's due to the fact that he's not like a lob threat.
Right.
He's not getting easy dunks. Like a lot of his shots are self-created, off the bounce, outside shots. Or like mid-range shots. It's not like he's getting Khalil Ware looks or, you know, Derek Lively looks. He's getting tougher shots.
I mean, to that point, what is his name? Mark Mitchell? He's getting all those looks on that Duke team via Kyle Filipowski.
That's true.
Is that his name?
Mark Mitchell.
And he's pretty good, by the way. Before we really dive into it, I made a video on YouTube at Derek-Parker on Kyle Filipowski. I noted there, everything we talk about regarding Filipowski is related to the fact that he is a seven-footer. So just because, like, he's not as athletic, or like Jake just talked about, just because he's not shooting 70% from the field, it's relative to the fact that he is a face-up seven-footer stretch big, like the true definition of a stretch big.
He's unique. Like,
he is unique. Yeah, like, we could compare him to centers all day, and he's going to look bad in that light.
Yeah.
But he's just not a traditional style center. It's not going to match up well. So let's jump into it. Cool. Offensively, I think there's a lot to like.
I do too.
Again, the shooting splits leave a lot to be desired, but as an offensive style center, I mean, I would say that's a selling point, would you?
Yeah.
It's definitely not defense.
No, definitely.
Averaging 15 points as a freshman for any school, much less a blue blood school, is good. Mm-hmm. That's great. It's not been efficient. His main selling point of the three-point ball has not been efficient, but what do you see out of him offensively that's good, and what's some of the bad?
He, like, you can tell something is there, first of all. He's comfortable with the ball in his hands. He's comfortable shooting. He takes shots, and they're good shots, and you think they're going to go in. Now, and a lot of freshmen struggle with efficiency. I think that's the number one thing across the board. Even the best freshmen struggle with consistently, you know, getting theirs on an efficient rate. And he does as well. And so there's stuff there. He has a nice little handle. He can create for himself when there's space, especially against bigger defenders. His shot's nice. He looks for it. He's in the right place. Like, there's not a mechanical issue there with the shooting for me. There's not an issue of him taking bad, contested shots. There's not the issue of him looking awkward or not willing to shoot. It's actually all the opposite. And so I believe in it. I'd like to see it more efficient, but he's one of those there's a few select guys each draft that I kind of look past the shooting splits and say, he looks like he can shoot. He's taking good shots. He looks comfortable, and they keep getting him the ball in those situations. So there's got to be a reason for that.
I agree. I totally buy the fact that he will become an average to decent three-point shooter in the NBA.
If he wants to play in the NBA, he's going to have to.
Yeah, 100%. It's not an option for him to not. But I buy the fact that he'll get there. I buy the fact that he'll maybe even be able to do a little bit of that mid-range in-between game, like you said, put the ball on the floor, create some shots, floaters, step-backs, runners, whatever you want to create in the middle. My main problem is in the post. I think there's a yin and a yang to being a stretch big. Like, to be able to get that gravity out on the edge, you have to be able to score inside too. And right now, he's fine inside, but he is far from dominant. So if he's not able to bring people out to the three-point line, and he's not able to score inside at like a high level, it's just really tough to be in that in-between of he's basically a forward at that point. He's almost, there's no center if he has no consistent game inside, can't protect the rim either, really. Like,
he projects, what, call it whatever position you want, he projects as someone who's going to stretch the floor. Like, that's why he's going to be out there.
Right.
And in my opinion, with the skill set right now, anything he gives you back to the basket off of like designated post-ups is kind of just a plus.
And on that note, though, would you not rather just have like a shooting guard out there shooting 43%? Like,
as a team drafting?
Yeah. Like, if you're only wanting floor spacing. Because,
sure.
I mean, honestly, he plays like a shooting guard. And if he's not putting up shooting guard numbers at that point, like, I get that he's 7 foot. Obviously, matchup-wise, exactly, it would be different. But the production's just not there. It's not there.
So, I agree. I think you agree with me on the shooting stuff. Like, it looks good. There's nothing, like, that stands out as, oh, he's not going to be able to shoot.
The only thing that gives me pause is the fact that I watched, he's taken 77 attempts this year, I think. I watched every single one. He's got probably 10 real bad misses. And I think I'm fine with misses, but like air balls hitting the side of the backboard, that's what gives me some pause. Other than that, like you said, mechanically fine, takes good shots. Like, and I buy that he's going to be a 3-point shooter. Like, I buy that he's going to hit him, but So, yes, to answer.
So when
question.
You buy that, do you also buy the fact, like, are you willing to look past stuff and see him as a plus, like, back to the basket score? Because, like, the percentages aren't there for three-point shooting. Same with his looks around the rim, especially in the half court. He has great footwork, like, skilled, really nice touch. Like, I say nice touch. He doesn't look clunky down there necessarily.
I have a really, really hard time seeing him scoring on, like, legitimate rim protectors, which that's the whole appeal of the stretch big is that they're probably not on the floor.
Up. Right.
But even still, like, it is far from good to me.
I agree. It's just
an interesting conundrum. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate because I like Flip. I think he can do a lot of good things.
It's almost like it's got to be a matchup, like a mismatch. Bigger, clunkier guys, you want him out on the perimeter. But for him to play in the post, it's going to have to be against smaller, weaker, you know, less long defenders. And mm-hmm. so him playing seems to be a bit situational, which I think there's 15 to 20 guys in this draft whose skill set isn't as situational. And so I think that's why maybe he's on the outside looking into that top 15, 20.
Yeah, I would agree. There's, like you said, there's a lot of situational guys. I texted you earlier in the week, Zach Edey's a situational guy. Like at that point, you're drafting for situation. And if you're drafting Flip for a specific situation that he really isn't good in college, like you're drafting him as a stretch big. So far, he's been a pretty poor stretch big.
Yeah.
It's just really tough.
Yeah.
And we're harping on him a little earlier than I intended. I like a lot of the things that he does. Again, totally buy that he'll be a shooter one day. I love the fact that he can put the ball on the floor, get around people. I think he's an underrated passer. I think he'll be a better underrated defender.
He'll be a better passer at the next level. More space.
I think there's a way to keep him in a really simple system of shoot it when you're open, pass it to the open man. Don't try to do too much or create too much. Just really limit turnovers, limit misses as much as you possibly can and play within the confines of your situation. And I think there's a role that he can find in the NBA for sure. I don't know if it's early on. He almost feels a little bit like a project pick, but not like a huge swing at the same time.
Project pick in terms of getting used to the NBA game, not necessarily skill level,
right?
Or feel. Because I think a lot of times it's like, you know, you draft a Usman Jang for the Thunder, right? Who you're going to have to work on basketball things, like to make him a better basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, those super hyper athletic bigs, maybe international guys that need to work on like basketball specific things. Like,
project is the wrong long-term
yeah.
pick, not a project pick. Because he's not a project.
He's going to have to get used to the NBA, the speed.
If he's already, I mean, it is blatantly apparent that he has struggled in times at the college level, adjusting to the college level, which is fine. He's a freshman. He's young, moved to a whole new situation.
Much bigger jump.
But that jump to the NBA, like if he's having trouble finishing at the rim now, it's going to be like a freight train next year, like 100%. So not a project pick. Wrong terminology. He is a long-term pick, though. Like, I have a really hard time seeing him on the floor a ton in year one.
Yeah.
Unless he's really, really drafted into, hey, shoot 53s.
I think NBA spacing helps him a little bit.
I agree.
He's going to get more open shots. And then two, like, I think majority of the time, I think he's probably going to play the five. I have a hard time seeing him right now be the four man.
If he was 6'10", sure, but
I mean, 6'10", a little bit more athletic, a little more fluid, he might be able to be the four. Let's say he's the five, though. I don't hate him with NBA spacing, with a one-on-one matchup against half the 5 men in the NBA, like off the bounce from the outside. I really don't. I think he has a nice handle. I think he can kind of get to a spot. The Virginia Tech game they played a week ago maybe, he got to a spot, showed a really tight handle, nice shot, like, there's something there. I think he kind of has, you might have said this in your video, like the bones of like what you want in a stretch five. It's just a matter of production.
I also said this. I said he feels like a puzzle that if it doesn't quite all come together, you don't have much.
Yeah.
But if the puzzle does come together and you're looking at like 8 Coca-Cola bottles or whatever the puzzle you're doing, if you really put everything together, if he can get his percentages up, if he can finish around the rim, if he can add strength and really bully people inside, if he can stay a net even on the defensive end, like, you're looking at a guy who has, like, real, real upside, being able to put the ball on the floor.
He's what you want to stretch five is up.
100%. 100%.
So then where do you see his draft range right now then? Because it's, I mean.
I think it's like 20 to 25. First round. I said this. I think he's closer to a lottery pick than a second rounder. Like, skill-wise.
I agree.
If he was blazing these last 10 games of the year, like, we could be looking at lottery. But he'd have to have a pretty big tournament, I think, for that.
Do you swing on him over a guy like Ware or Lively, who is probably a little bit more highly projected going into the year? Because Filipowski's had far more production.
Far more production, far more opportunity. Definitely. But,
which those is guys proven. Are coming off the I mean, bench. But that's, I mean.
I agree. It's tough.
Like, there's a reason. That means Filipowski's better every day in practice. I mean,
yeah,
better in the weight room. Like, that's just what that means.
Better teams, too. I do take that swing. I value this. I think I say it all the time on here, everywhere on my videos. I think the stretch seven-footer, the skilled seven-footer is the future of the NBA. And I'll take that. And they're both that, too. I wouldn't say stretch necessarily.
He's truly like ball in his hand stretch.
Yep. Yep. Much more so than where Lively is in his own.
I haven't even seen it much this year.
I don't know what to think about Lively, but I do. I take this swing. I like now, I don't know if I take it over like other guys in that range.
Yeah, but I was talking more positionally.
Yeah, for sure.
So that means he's probably going to go to a playoff team. Is there anyone there that you like?
We talked about it pre-pod. I really like the Grizzlies. Like you said, they're not necessarily like bound by position, but I think there's a really interesting thing where they've got good basketball players right now. Mm-hmm. They can almost kind of stash him without him having to come in and immediately start chucking shots. I think he's kind of like a stretch replacement when Jaren Jackson Jr. comes to the bench. And then even if you want to run like a five out with Steven Adams off the court, him and Jaren Jackson Jr., like that's interesting next to Ja too, who is going to want to get a lot of paint touches. I just think that's really interesting. They're a playoff team. They're going to be in that range. I like the Nets next to Claxton and Kyrie and those guys who can create a little bit. I honestly, not a playoff team yet. Oklahoma City intrigues me.
Yeah.
Like being able to run him out there next to Chet, having 2 7-footers, Chet's obviously going to be much more dominant defensively. He can kind of help in that area. I don't know. It'd almost be like Oklahoma City flipping the script of like right now they're playing small ball. They could run out like a huge lineup.
Sure. I think the first two that came to mind in my mind in that range were the Clippers and the Mavericks. Clippers, like they have Zubac, who's the opposite of Filipowski.
Yep.
And so I think there's something there. If you think Zubac is the center of the future, which I mean, I see nothing that leads me to not believe that. Yeah. I mean, I think he's their dude there right now.
I thought you meant like archetype of the future. I was like,
No, but I mean, for that team right now,
yeah.
They're not moving them. And so kind of you get the opposite coming off the bench. I could see something intriguing there. And then in Dallas, they obviously value that with Christian Wood, Kleba, Bertans. You're going to not have to pay Filipowski as much as any of those dudes, especially off the bat. So if you don't think you can keep all those guys, need someone that can stretch the floor around Luka, get rid of a Kleba, get rid of a Bertans, maybe do that if you like it.
And that's really interesting because they're a team that has proven they'll take the swing shots on like formerly highly touted guys, Jaden Hardy.
Oh yeah.
So I like that too.
It's interesting. I'm really curious to kind of see how the rest of the season plays out for him and Duke. Because if it takes is for Duke to make the tournament, win a few games, and him to be the best player, and we're talking about him at 12 to 14 potentially.
Yep.
But if he continues to be inefficient, Duke continues to go 500 every week, then you're looking at 25 to 30 maybe. It's interesting.
There's a legitimate future timeline where we look back and we're like, how the heck did Kyle Filipowski fall that far?
Right.
Like, he had the tools. Obviously, it wasn't together yet, but like now it's so apparent that everything was going to come together. He was a freshman at a blue blood school, scoring more points than anybody on the team. Like, what are we doing here? So it's interesting. It's really interesting. It's a tough conversation. We're fans of Flip, though, I would say. I would say I like him.
I need to apologize because I could not stand him pre-draft. Honestly, I wouldn't even watch him. I thought he was a wannabe Drew Timmy.
He, He was legitimately one of the hardest prospects to find legit film on. Every time I looked, he was like balling in a mask.
It's a mixtape.
Like, what? Yeah.
There was no like, it was all just mixtapes. He's good though.
He's good. He has far exceeded my expectations for the year. Already.
If you told me he'd be the best player on Duke, it's, come on now.
Wait, yeah, with the number one college-ranked prospect coming in and a seven-footer who was supposed to be better.
I'd be like, Duke must be, you know, flirting 500. Which they are.
All right, next up, we're going to do a fun little exercise.
Let's do it.
We are going to do a 2019 through 2021 redraft with a caveat. Ooh. We cannot take any players who were drafted in the lottery.
Ooh, I like it.
You better like it. You came up with it.
So we're drafting the lottery from those 3 years with no lottery players.
That is correct.
That's kind of fun.
Now, trying to think of how I want to do this. Do you want first pick or do you want me to have first pick?
Do we have the same first pick probably?
I don't think so. No.
Flip a coin. Tell your phone to flip a coin. Let's see what happens. I'll take heads.
Phone, flip a coin.
Give me heads.
Tails. Oh, is that me?
Yep, you get it. You want first or second?
Alternating?
Yeah, just back
okay.
and forth.
Okay. Then I guess I'll take first.
Okay, do it.
I'm going to draft Desmond Bane first. Mainly because he's my dude and I was really high on him in the draft. He has even blown my already high expectations out of the water. He's a 25-5-5 guy. He is everything you want in a shooter. He's everything you want in like a two-guard defender. He's strong. I just really like Desmond Bane. I think he's a future all-star for a long time. He can fit next to almost any focal point. I just really like Desmond Bane.
And he's proven that he can be the best player on the court for stretches of time, like with Ja out, with Jaren Jackson out, like, and you can still kind of win games around him. I don't know if he, like a lot of these guys, I don't know if they can be the best player on a like deep playoff team, but they're dang good.
Yeah. I don't know. There's maybe two guys on here that I could see being the best player. He's not one of them.
But
he could easily be the second.
He is the
best
floor.
Of like, yeah, the best of the number two options. So
at the second pick, I'm going to go with Tyrese Maxey. 21st pick in the 2020 draft. He's with Philly, probably their third best player, easily their third best player, behind Embiid and Harden. When you say, oh, you have someone else?
No, I'm.
Are you trying to say second
best? I'm trying to think of a case to give him second, but I
can't. No, he's not.
No, I can't.
No, he's not. You know, it's him, Poole, and Bane are probably the best guards in this kind of group of people that we're going to be talking about. I favor him over the other two.
Yep.
I think he's better as a true scorer. I think he plays just with this pace, up and down game that translates to really any high level team. He doesn't turn, like, I don't know what his stats are on this. I know he didn't turn the ball over as much as Poole. It might not be as little as Bane. He's not as good of a defender as Bane, but I think he's a better defender than Poole. But yeah, I just favor Maxey.
Three, I have your boy, Jordan Poole, Golden State Warrior. He, to me, feels like he has some of the highest star potential out of all of these guys. Like,
very gravitational.
Quick twitch, gravitational. Like, he just does stuff out there on the basketball court that not a lot of guys can do. Like, it makes it easier to do it there than nearly anywhere else with the gravity of his like code.
You got to be good to do it in that system though.
100%. Like, you know what I mean? It almost to me feels like there's a scenario where if he lands anywhere else, what's he doing right now? Like 12 points per game on 38% shooting, but he landed with the Warriors. So he's going to be a like long-term 25. That. And yeah, he's going to be a 25 a night guy in 3 years. So I think Jordan Poole is definitely in the conversation for best player in this entire thing that we're doing here.
Totally. I think those are the top three, especially guards. Four. Yep. I'm going to take Alperen Şengün out of Houston. I think he was the 16th pick in 2021. He's having a really good sophomore year, rookie year, kind of got, you know, inconsistent run. He did for the first part of this year, too. Playmaking big man, struggles on the defensive side. He's one of the best post. I think he's third or fourth leading scorer per post up in the NBA. Good passer. I think he's kind of the big equivalent to Poole. And I actually have him above Poole just from the fact that I think he's going to get you more rebounding. I think he's actually a better passer than Poole. I can see you running an offense with better players around him than you can with Poole.
I also had him four, and I also had Tyrese Maxey at two. So we have the same top four. Şengün was one of the two guys that I think could end up being a one out of all
these
guys.
Him and Poole? Or him and Maxey?
Him and Maxey. Poole.
I don't think any of them are, but I think it's those two.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying they're going to be, but like
Şengün's already the best player on his team.
He is the best player on his team, and they're still barely running the offense through him. So I'm not saying he's going to be a good number one. I'm just saying like he's definitely got much more potential.
Do you feel like you can put, we'll move on after this. Do you feel like you can put better players around Şengün and maximize them rather than around Poole? I kind of do.
Şengün has worse like holes in his game, I will say. Are they more coverable though?
I don't know. It's, I don't know. It's interesting because they're similar.
Yeah.
They're similar. Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting.
You got five?
Yep. Five. I have Nick Claxton, DPOY candidate this year.
Did you fake me out pre-pod?
No.
I said I had over like six guys. And you're like, geez, you have them high.
Yeah. I didn't realize. Once I actually got to looking at the list, I was like, yeah, he's up there.
So valuable.
He is. And he's a guy we've been high on forever. Even I didn't like foresee this type of season. He's killing it. He's a huge piece of why Brooklyn is successful right now. So I got Claxton at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Six, I got Trey Murphy out of New Orleans. Feels kind of high. He's less proven maybe than some of these guys. I just watch Trey Murphy and I think he could be Mikal Bridges. He could be that elite 3-and-D threat. He's one of the best catch and shoot guys in the NBA. He has unlimited range. He's got the pretty stroke. Man, I really think he's a stud. And I think that New Orleans has a super crowded front half of their roster. It's kind of hard to shine in that. But I'll take him six.
I had him seven, so I'm going to take Kevin Porter Jr. I mean, he's good. I don't have a lot to say on it.
You really like him a lot.
I'm a massive fan of everything that he does. He's better than a lot of the rest of the guys on this list. He is. He's better at basketball.
Like, who's to say if he went in Houston, we'd like him a lot more? Just, I mean, Houston, I feel like, ugh, it's a
not even cesspool. Like, I don't know that I love. It's really if he had a different backcourt partner, is it? Like, if he had a defensive-minded backcourt partner, maybe I'd love him. Or, like, better lob threats, maybe. Mm. I don't know.
That's fair.
He's just better at everyone else at basketball on this list.
At eight, I got Emmanuel Quickly. He's actually played really well recently. Still comes off the bench. Kind of a spark plug scorer. Long, kind of rangy athlete.
Next up, I got Lu Dort. I think he just plays winning basketball. I'm not necessarily sure I like him so much for Oklahoma City. He's good for what he does. I think if he was anywhere else, he'd be a huge, huge piece. He plays playoff basketball to me. Like, defend the best player, play hard, hit a few threes here and there, and don't, like, absolutely cost. I think Lu Dort's really valuable.
Yeah, I feel like my vision on him has gotten blurred just because it's in Oklahoma City. We see him a lot. We've seen him be really bad, really good.
We've seen him as like the third scoring option. Like once he's like sixth, like what does that look like? It's interesting.
At 10, I got Herb Jones out of New Orleans. He was kind of tough to rank on this. And we had a discussion pre-pod, you know, who's better out of him and Dort? And I was like, Herb, he's younger. He's a year older.
Yeah.
But I got Herb Jones. Similar reasons to Dort. Going to be the best defender on the court. Super disruptive. We saw him in the playoffs last year play really, really well against that Suns team. I believe in him a little bit more as a cutting transition scorer than I do Dort. I view Dort as maybe more of a little bit of a half court guy, ball in his hands. But yeah, I got Herb Jones at 10.
I got Quentin Grimes, who's having a really good season for New York.
Playing a ton of minutes.
Yeah, he is. And he's been really impactful. Yeah, I got Quentin Grimes.
12. I got Grant Williams at 12 out of Boston. He's tough. I just think that he plays playoff basketball, can defend almost every position on the court. And then he's shooting like 45% from three this year on catch and shoot shots. Like, that's really good. If you're picking a guy at this range who's going to be a role player, I value that.
Next up, I got Cole Anthony. I think he's real good at basketball. Next guy.
Jane McDaniels is my last one.
Gotcha.
Super good defender, long rangy, super long athlete. Show some scoring stuff here and there. He's a guy who's got a really high ceiling. I feel like still has a lot of room to grow as a player.
100%. 100%. Jake, I have a question for you.
Word.
Who's got next?
Ooh, you want to know who's got next?
I do.
Stephon Castles got next. 6'6 point guard, 195 pounds out of Newton High School in Covington, Georgia. He signed with UConn. At ESPN, he's ranked 15th, 24-7, 10, and Rivals 10. He plays for the Atlanta Express. In the few games that I got statted for the Atlanta Express EYBL team, he averaged 20 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks a game. He's a McDonald's All-American. FIBA U18 U.S. team. He averaged 6 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist for that team. And then a month ago, they beat Duncanville, who's the number one team in the country. No, I don't know if they beat him actually, but he had 41 points. Oh. You need to watch that film. Unbelievable, dude. Like, got me really excited. He's one of my favorite kids in this class. Long, athletic point guard. Super high IQ. Best notice it when he draws fouls. I mean, baits guys. He just has... that's a skill now, and I think he really has that.
Do you think that's more of a thing coming up now? Like
100%. This summer, if we get to go watch some like AAU stuff, maybe EYBL teams.
Free throw merchants are going to be out.
It's huge. It's huge. Great pace feel for the game. Really nice mid-range game. That's where I think where he's most comfortable scoring the basketball. Plays well off of PNR. And I think it's easy to view a 6'6 athletic guy as there's no way that he's a true point guard. Like, he's a legit point guard. He plays great off the pick and roll. He doesn't get crazy good separation, which I don't love. He takes some tough shots. He makes them at the high school level, but they're not great shots. You can really feel his gravity as a player. Every play that he makes has just such momentum on the game. And I think that's a special characteristic to have at a young age. Not really a great shooter, more of a scorer. Like his mindset to score, kind of like Kevin Porter Jr., how it's like flashy, can go get buckets, but not a great spot up shooter. Makes big plays as a defender, but isn't a guy who's going to guard the best player on the court for 25 minutes a game. My biggest con on him is he coasts at times. Like there's times it's like, yeah, he's cool. And he's just like kind of jogging around, jersey in his mouth, kind of meh. Really good vision and transition. That's where he's best in terms of playmaking, which I would like to see change in the half court. A lot of times he's going to get a bucket when the ball's in his hands. And then that's what's going to need to improve at the college level, because at the high school level, game's so congested in the half court. In college, it's the same thing. NBA, it's better. But like is a prospect, if he's able to pass and make plays, especially with like a lob threat on the court, his stock's going to rise a ton. But if he's still just a scorer at the end of his college career, I think there's kind of a cap on how good he can be. So that's who's got next. Stephon Castle. Check him out. Check out that Duncanville game.
I love it. Next up, performance of the week. I actually had Jairus Walker. Again, my boy, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 10 of 14 from the field, 2 for 4 from the three-point line, and 2 blocks. This was against Cincinnati. Houston is the best team in the country. I don't care that they've lost to
Temple.
Yeah, I don't care. Houston's the best team in the country.
He was good. And if you didn't watch that game, he took over the game with the ball in his hands, which hadn't done this year.
Right. I mean, like some of the mid-range stuff he was doing.
Oh.
I mean, I lost feeling in my feet just now.
It was great.
Thinking about Jairus Walker.
It was great. I mean, like, he had that swag too, man. Like, he had that swag. He had the ball in his hand, just like going to work.
If he's 6'8", I'm 5'3". Like, no shot that dude.
He looks like he's 6'10", dude.
He looks 7'4". Yeah, it's crazy. He's massive.
Is he the best college prospect? You think it's Brandon Miller?
Brandon Miller.
Is he the second best? I think I have him over Keontae.
They're all so different. That's what so beautiful about the 2023 class. They are so different.
Sohan or Johnny Davis. Hindsight, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, really, though.
Yeah. I think I had JD a spot behind Sohan.
Did you? I think I'd take Jairus over Keontae. But either way, my player of the week, Jairus. Prospect of the week is Julian Strother. Had a huge game against Portland. He had 40 points on 8 of 12 shooting from 3, 14 of 21 from the field, 6 boards, 1 assist. You don't need to, pass that much. Buckets out there.
Getting hoops.
He had a big game, but I chose this because of what he did in the game. Not just the fact that he got 40 points. He highlighted 3 things that I think are going to help him immensely as a pro. I think this is his role offensively as a pro. Catch and shoot threes. He shot at a high level. In transition, he finished at a high level. And off of cuts, he scored at a high level. I think those are like the 40-point games that Keontae George has where the ball's in his hands just doing stupid stuff are great. And that's why you're drafting him. But you're drafting Julian Strother not to score 40 points a game, but to catch and shoot open threes, to run in transition and finish at the rim, and then to be a great cutter off-ball scorer. And that's what he did to score 40 points. If he can have a few more of those, he's going to be a dude that is going to outperform and like be better than the second-round selection that a lot of people have him at right now. So Julian Strother, that's my prospect of the week.
I love it. One thought I had, I'm working on another little YouTube video that I'm going to put out later this week. But just a thought I had, if the Pistons end up winning a few games, slip on lottery night, and end up, let's say, with Jairus Walker, I want you to just like sit there, close your eyes, Jake. Envision a Jairus Walker, Jalen Duren front court right now. Like, is that not the most is that not the most physically imposing front court you have ever seen?
And I love those two guys. Oh, those are like, that's my squad.
They could
Cade at the one.
Yeah.
Jane Ivy? Oh my, this team is perfect.
It's the all Jake Kerr team.
It is. Who's the wing on that team? Bogdanovich, let's go.
Bogey.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of fun.
Just a little hypothetical I had to come up with.
What a crazy just lineup that is. With those four, 6'7" point guard. We love Jaden Ivey and what he brings. He's great physically. And then you have Dern and Walker is your 4-5.
You could run PNR, Cade and Ivey with Jairus. PNP, Cade and Ivey with Jairus. PNR, Jairus Walker with Jalen Duren. Like, the possibilities are endless there.
It's crazy.
That'd be so fun.
It's a lot of fun.
So fun. But Jairus is fun anywhere because he's a fun prospect.
He's awesome.
You want to answer some Twitter questions? We got one Slack question from the man himself, Ignacio, friend of the pod, Risotto.
One what question?
A Slack. Do you know what Slack is? You're not a real entrepreneur if you don't know what Slack is. You don't know what Slack is? Like the messaging platform? Uh-uh. Wow, you've never worked in communications, I see.
I haven't.
I get 300 Slacks a day.
I have a real college degree.
Ooh.
Organizational leadership.
Question from Ignacio. What aspects do you value the most when projecting a shooter to the NBA level? Shooting mechanics / form, shooting touch, percentages, volume, shot versatility, difficulty of attempts, etc. Also, which of these aspects would you find that most people overrate when projecting a shooter to the NBA level?
Footwork and variety of shot attempts for me. Jordan Hawkins is, I think, maybe the best shooter in this draft.
And, so good.
And when I watch him, he might be my favorite shooting prospect because his footwork's incredible. His movement off ball is unbelievable. He's always set when he gets the ball. And when he's not, he's like, when you watch the Warriors, Thompson, Poole, and Curry, right? They're three best shooters. They take a variety of shots. The variety has to do with their footwork on it. Like, they're coming off of screens and their feet are pointed different directions. The footwork is just so different in shot that they're taking. Jordan Hawkins has some of that in him, man. Like, he's coming off little pin downs, curling off of him. He's coming off flare screens. He's, you know, elevator screens, staggers. Like, he's coming off of a variety of different screens, and his footwork is being showcased in a variety of different ways. And I think that is just specific. But if you're looking at shooters across the board, I'm taking the guy who's being asked to do a bunch of different things because I think it translates so well to the NBA.
Yeah, I would agree. Probably not the answer that Ignacio or anyone else wants to hear. I think you have to take all of it into account. I mean, just scouting 101, you have to look at the full product. So if a guy's mechanics are great, his form is great, he's got good touch, but the percentages are down, you can take the sum of that and build around it. Or let's say the percentages are really good, but he's got a hitch and he takes really bad shots. Like, you just have to take everything into account.
Mechanics is the one that if it's bad, like if all those are good and one of them is just like kind of, if there's a weakness in one of those, mechanics is the hardest one for me to overlook. You got to have a quick shot. It's got to be quick and it's got to be pure. You can't, no wasted motion.
That's a great question. Ignacio is one of our Draft Digest writers. If you don't read him, you are absolutely missing out. He does great work. Go read him, si.com/draft. And then the next question is from another Draft Digest writer, Jam Hines, also does great work. Friend of the pod, by the way. What first round prospects do you think are the most fit and scheme dependent and why? This is really tough.
Let's go one lottery, one non-lottery.
Honestly, it might not totally be answering the question. One that I think is going to be more fit and scheme dependent than people think is Maxwell Lewis. I think
he's a lottery guy too.
He's a lottery guy. He struggled against higher level competition a little this year. He's kind of known as another do-it-all guy. He's gotten like Jalen Williams comps. But I think that move to the NBA level is going to be really big for him. I don't see creator potential out the gate. getting him into a role that he can really thrive in early is going to be big for him, whether that's catch and shoot, give him some actions to work off of. I don't know what that looks like, but I don't think he's going to have as seamless as a transition as people think. So I think getting him into a nice scheme early would do him some justice.
My lottery is going to be Brandon Miller, actually. Love him as a prospect, top five or six guy on my board, kind of varies. I think he's a little bit more of a situational fit than we think with those kind of top few guys. I think it's similar to Jabari Smith in that term. Jabari Smith is not getting to be player he could be right now in Houston because of how many ball dominant guys around him. And he's kind of just a catch and shoot 3-and-D guy, which is not maximizing his full potential right now. You disagree.
What do you see his potential as outside of 3-and-D?
I think he can create off the dribble more than what he's being allowed to do right now.
I agree, but it's not necessarily to the point where it's like I would rather have him doing that than like Jalen Green doing that.
Sure.
That makes sense. Yeah. I don't know. I've never been as high on his middle of the floor game than you.
I think Brandon Miller just kind of falls in the same spot. I think there's a world where next year we're like, oh, Brandon Miller's kind of a 3-and-D guy. When in college, we see a little bit more of him creating off the bounce, you know, having the ball in his hands and just creating shots.
I agree. He'll need more scheming than people think. He's not a guy that's going to be able to go take over some team for sure.
And if I were to pick someone outside the lottery?
I mean, honestly, we talked about him. Flip. Filipowski is going to be a guy who he is going to have a lot of guidance early on. A whole bunch.
He's a good one.
Thinking of the number one guy, I don't know if anyone stands out outside of the lottery right now. Anyway, great question. Great writer. Everyone go read Jam. Everyone go read Ignacio Draft Digest's finest. Next question, Junior. Where do you put Kyle Filipowski on your draft board? Me personally, I see him top 15, very versatile and mobile big that can stretch the floor and bag down low. Yeah, I think we both agree we have him like 20, 25-ish. But again, if he can like finish the year strong, he can absolutely jump up there. Like,
at his best, he's that.
I think, yeah. High level ceiling right now, he's probably top 15, 100%. Yeah. And the flashes are there nightly. I mean, he had 18 points the other night. He's doing crazy stuff in the mid-range. He's blocking shots, which we don't see at like a high level.
It's just at 15, let's say it's 15. I'd then be taking him over some guys. And
it's not a knock on Filipowski. It's just that there are so many good prospects.
Like, are you taking that over a Taylor Hendricks, Maxwell Lewis?
45%.
Grady Dick, Jet Howard. Like, yeah, it's really tough. There's a group of guys there that it's hard to take him over right now.
It's just loaded. It's a loaded, loaded, loaded class. Alex Bowlerjack. Is Jalen Williams a top three rookie? Why or why not? I think yes, to be honest. I think he's three. The argument there would either be Keegan Murray, Jaden Ivey. Outside of those five,
Kessler.
I don't see Kessler. Full NBA season right now. Those guys are like trending up, but if you take the full product, I think it's those five. Bankero's better. Matherin's better. Ivey definitely has a case. Throw Jalen Williams. Give him the production that the Pistons are giving him. I think he's better.
He's been a more valuable player on a better team. So I'll give him third.
I think so, which is crazy that Oklahoma City had the second pick and ended up having a guy who a lot of people think is the third best rookie, like with their third first rounder. That's crazy.
It's nuts.
Chris Camilleri tweeted Tyrese Proctor with an Australian emoji. And I agree. Not a question, but I like Tyrese Proctor.
I do too. Yeah, he's fine.
I didn't realize he was a freshman. I don't know why I thought he was a sophomore.
That whole team was freshman.
Yeah, true. Good passer. Best passer in the class.
Best passer in the class?
Yeah.
Like in this draft class or in that?
Freshman class.
No.
Who?
Anthony Black's better passer.
I think it's close. He's got more versatility because he's 6'8". But Jason Adler, where is Trace Jackson Davis of Indiana going to go in the draft? Early second? Mid-second?
Yeah, I think late first, early second's kind of his range. But dude, he's one of those guys, if he goes 20 and a team really likes him.
Dude can ball.
Okay. If he goes 50... I get it. He's a good player. He's going to be one of the top three or four guys for National Player of the Year this year.
So, 100%. He's
a stud right now. He's a stud.
Every night you look and he's just got like 100 points, 40 rebounds, 8 blocks. Like it's just the production.
Indiana got whooped up on last night by Maryland though.
That's sad. That's sad for Jason Adler.
Whooped up.
Tough. And I think that's it for this pod.
That is it.
It's been a good one. We've covered a lot of ground.
We had a good time.
A lot of high school, college, NBA ground. We had a good time. You burned 135 calories. Oh, not yet. You're at what? Like 90. 90 calories-ish. Go follow at Draft Digest Show on Twitter.
Oh, it's even worse. Room temperature.
At Draft Digest on Twitter. Go read Draft Digest on the Google machine because they do great work. Let's see if I can nail it this week. JAKEEEKERR. Jake Kerr at Twitter. Maybe you should change that. Was Jake Kerr taken? Just like regular old Jake Kerr?
I don't know. I made it my sophomore year of high school.
Sophomore Jake wasn't too smart. Follow at DParkOK. And we'll see you next time.